Session number 21276, Reel 3.
Jeff Easton, Reel 3. So, what were the 5 and 4 sort of doing when you arrived?
The Operation Goodwood was underway. Right. And it was a bit of a shambles, not to put too fine a point on it, and not very successful, not as successful as old Montgomery hoped anyway.
Right. Explain to me what they were trying to do, what's the operation?
We were trying to knock a hole in the Germans to get in, but they, not surprisingly, didn't want us to.
So and where were they? Do you know whereabouts they were when you
joined? Near Calm, yes. Mm. And we were over the River Odon, I think it was, yes. And I remember afterwards we came over Pegasus Bridge. At the name of the place is escapes me now, but you remember Pegasus. Just by the way, if you'd like me to tell you, I later went to work with a bloke who was reputed to be the first man who landed on D-Day.
Really?
I think he did. He was the first man. And he was in my office, you see. He was in charge. And it always surprised me that he was ever in charge of an exercise like that, because he panicked at everything. And I thought, well, how on earth did he perform? And it turns out that he landed about 12:30. I don't know whether you saw the programme on ITV, on television, which reenacted that scene. Those glider pilots were absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. They got them in 50 yards of the target. And I think the firefight there lasted about 30 minutes, because there weren't many Germans there, only 6 or so. It was about 30 minutes, and they wiped it and took the bridge. Then they sat there until the commandos with Lord Lovett came along from the coast.
Yeah.
And then our hero went back to England, and he didn't see any more war.
Oh, really?
But he made a career out of it. He gave lectures in America and on the continent and in Sweden, talking about, and all it was 30 minutes. He wouldn't talk about it to me.
No, you weren't paying.
He wouldn't, because I'd spent rather longer.
Yeah.
But he even had an article in Reader's Digest,
yeah,
for which I drew all the maps. And
so, what did you do in Operation Goodwood?
Well, Goodwood, I saw those tanks going over the railway embankment and getting potted off by this 88s down the road. Yeah. There was an occasion there. There was an 88 shell went through 3 Shermans in one out the other. That's how good they were. And the Sherman was rubbish, really. It hadn't got proper armour at all. It was so soft. Even small arms would nearly penetrate some of it.
So what were you doing? You were in your...
I was at the back of the scene going off, keeping my head down, to tell you the truth. And occasionally I'd nip off down the road and pick up wounded. And the top of the car being flat, we could get stretchers on, you see, and carry them back. And I didn't do any fighting at all. There was no question of gunnery for me or anything like that. But
can you remember any of those particular wounded you picked up? Were these out of tanks or?
Oh yes, all of them.
Yeah.
Yes, all of them.
So these were your.
Yes. Yes. Tanks. Yes. And there was some infantry too who'd stepped on mines, with the legs blown off and that sort of thing. Well, I remember saying to myself, well, no matter what happens, now, afterwards, nothing could be worse than this. But it was. When my first wife died of cancer. That was far worse. Edna had her husband die of cancer too.
Oh, really?
That's so. Yeah. We've not been married very long.
Oh, right. Oh, I thought you were married
15 years. No, and I've been very lucky with both, yes. both my wives.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So what's 13 years this year we've been married.
Yeah.
But her husband, and I thought, well. Here's somebody who knows what it's like.
That's it. Someone who's been through the same thing. Yeah. So we get back to Operation Good. So how long did this take? I mean,
several days. Might have run into a week or two. Uh-huh. But the whole skyline was lit up at night. There were very lights and parachute flares and things going off all the time, and we were being shelled from time to time, mortars and things going off. It was just bedlam. It was you couldn't from any particular point see what was going on. I mean, there are no such thing as a great battle. There's lots of little ones going on, you see, and then unless you can take a back seat and have an overall look, you only see as far as the next hedge.
What sort of countryside was it? I mean, this was
it was what was called bocage. There was a lot of trees about, you see, and hedgerows, and which is not a good tank country at all.
Who were you taking your orders directly from?
From the squadron leader or his the second to IC.
And they'd be sending you off.
Yes.
Were there any opportunities to use your own initiative? I mean, if you saw
That's what I liked about the job. My initiative was called into account when I decided which way to get to somewhere, or whether it was too dangerous to go this way or that, you see.
So it must have been tremendously noisy.
Hell, yeah. There was a lot of noise. And, of course, some were blanked out with the headsets, but even so, I've been left with tinnitus ever since.
So how did people, did you get breaks? Did you get time to have a sleep, get time to eat?
If we got 2 or 3 hours sleep a night, that was it. We must have been walking about like zombies. We must have been, yeah. Because, you know, we went into a harbour, what we call harbour or lager, after dark each night. Mm-hmm. And of course dark each night in July is pretty late, and we were up before dawn the next morning. So when you've got to fill up with petrol and ammunition and other stuff as well and have a meal, there's not a lot of time for sleeping. It was very, very hard.
So you were living on rations, were you?
Yeah, although we used to get one cooked meal, we had a cook's wagon used to come up at night. Yes, but we did have ration packs. Yeah.
So you were quite well supplied with things then. You got some cooked meals and.
Yes, yes. We didn't lack for anything on the physical side. No, no. I never darned any socks. So I always used to get new ones.
They were available, were they? As well?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, every night there was a sort of call from the quartermaster sergeant. Who want? What do you want? You know, another pair of trousers down there. You know.
What was the spirit like? I mean, were they
very good?
Yeah.
Although I'm about to say, most of us didn't expect to get out of it alive.
So you just thought, right, well, we'll just...
You might as well carry on, yeah.
I mean, some people must have found it very difficult to cope with.
I'm sure they did. There were suspicions about people who shot themselves, but whether they did or not, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
No idea.
Perhaps nobody will ever know.
No.
So they didn't do autopsies then, did they, to see what sort of bullet it was?
No.
So eventually... Operation Goodwood came to a close.
Eventually it came and we moved Don't ask me where we moved. We moved all over the blooming. The trouble was, you see, we had maps, but the maps only showed you the surrounding 5 or 6 miles. We didn't know where it was located in the great. We didn't know how far it was from Paris or how far from anywhere, you see. We just had these maps, which for the most part were empty because there were no built up, there were no urban areas there.
So did you get some sort of rest after Goodwood?
We had, in fact, for the first 132 days we were in contact with the enemy.
Really?
But not all the time, because a squadron would be pulled back for a rest and then replace somebody else to come back for a rest. Mm-hmm. That's how it worked.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long would you get as a rest?
Oh, a few days, not long. Yeah. And if anything brewed up, you see, of course we were back in.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you had a rest,
yeah,
would you go back to...
We'd have a bath.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. So how far would you go back? Would you go back to a sort of a rest
Not far.
Area?
Yeah. Oh, not far. No, yeah. No. Mm-hmm. 10 miles maybe. That's
right.
About it.
Okay. Mm. But they'd have baths there or showers?
Well, yes, we had bath units. Shower units used to come round. And, yes. Not very often, though, really. Because most of our ablutions were in the form of a powder, which we used to tip down our collars and then go like that.
What was that like?
That was called AL-63. It was DDT, in fact, which was just dangerous later on. Yeah.
They used to spray DDT everywhere, didn't they?
Oh, they did.
On your roses.
Oh, it was a universal...
Yeah.
Yes.
So, do you remember roughly where you went or particular incidents after that? I mean,
dear.
I know it's difficult because if you don't know where you are, then...
It's true. Half the time we didn't know where we were at all. Mm. But you kept being pushed into the line from time to time, and you thought we were holding them back, and you didn't know who was on the right or who was on the left. Nobody told you. The officers used to go off for a briefing, but they quickly forgot what they'd been told because it was different when you got there.
Yeah.
And no, it was just a blur, really. We were shunted about all over the place.
Mm.
We did accompany some Americans on one occasion, and I was more than relieved not to be in one of their units.
Really?
Oh, yes.
What was happening then?
Well, Americans, the soldiers were as good as anybody else, but they were so abominably badly led.
Really?
I'm sure they were, yes. Yeah. I mean, they were one place we took over from them. They were patrolling roads at night in tanks and wondered why they were losing so many.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I ask you.
Yeah.
Can't imagine anything so foolish.
Yeah.
And they've learnt nothing since, I don't think.
So they were relying on the competence of their tank, the safety of their tank, which you can't do.
Yeah.
So what opinion did you have of the Americans? I mean, did you have...
Not a lot. They were a messy lot, and of course, you could always tell where they'd been. There were piles of K rations that, uneaten or all over the place. They made a mess everywhere.
Yeah.
And of course, old Patton pinched our petrol, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to eat any American rations?
No, I didn't. No, we had an opportunity once to eat some German rations, which we threw away, and there was a near riot. In fact, it got to the stage where the colonel threatened to pull everybody back out of it until they were replaced. It was awful stuff. It was appalling.
Where did you find it? Was it found or?
Oh no! It was issued. It was issued, part of our issue.
What sort of things were in it?
Well, there was jam looking like jelly. Didn't taste like jam.
Mm.
And there was black bread and some other stuff. It was foul.
Mm.
We couldn't possibly eat it. Couldn't possibly eat it.
Mm.
But fortunately, we had spares. We had our own packs that tied us over for a day or two.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, see, I'm the man who invented fried treacle pudding.
Did you?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, we had tins of puddings in the amongst the rations, and it used to say, put in a pan of hot water for 2 hours. I mean, how impractical can you get? So I decided the only thing to do was slice it up and fry it.
What did you cook on?
We had petrol stoves, which we used quite illegally in the vehicles, because you couldn't always use them outside because of the wind, blow them out and that sort of thing. And in the tank crews, you used to put them on the floor of the turret, on top of the ammunition, you know, and that was frowned on and strictly against all the rules, but I never heard of any accidents.
Really?
No.
Yeah. I suppose warming up, ammunition wasn't such an obvious problem, yeah. So, can you remember other incidents, you know, because you went quite a, you know, the 5 and 4?
Yeah, we bobbed about such a lot, you see, and, I think it was called Boom, a place called Boom. I don't know if it was Belgium or Holland, I think. And these four horses had got caught up in crossfire and got themselves shot in, lying in the road. And as soon as the last shot died away, all the civvies rushed out. And in about less than 10 minutes, all there were was a pile of hooves. Yeah.
Gosh. Because they were starving, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, they ate horses anyway over there, didn't they?
Yeah.
Never seen anything so quick. There was just a pile of steaming hooves. Yeah.
Amazing. So you went into, was it into Holland first, was it?
No, Belgium we were in first. Yes. Went into Belgium.
Yeah. Do you remember any towns or villages there?
Not much happened in Belgium, as I recall. Oh, of course, that was a bit later. There was the Ardennes in Christmas 1944, which was devilish cold.
Yeah.
And the car was set on fire there, on a mortar shell.
Your armoured car.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Should we talk about Holland then? Belgium first.
Yeah.
Before then, we'll work our way around chronologically.
I'd have to look at a map again to refresh my memory, because I...
Do you want to have a look at a map? Because that might help, mightn't it?
I don't know whether I can find...
So, you did one operation in France, in On the Moonlight Night, you were saying.
Yes. It was after we'd crossed the Seine, and... old Montgomery had this idea that if we pushed on quickly, we might achieve some breakthrough. And we covered about 40 kilometres this night, pouring with rain, pitch black. But came the dawn, there was a bit of a shock in store, because we found that in our column there were German vehicles as well, who thought they were going home, you see. We were going the same way as they. And... And so all hell let loose, of course. And it was bloody murder, to tell you the truth, because there was some hand-to-hand stuff and small arms at short range, and it was really bloody murder, it was. And it was a terrible shock to look behind you and see a German tank. It was terrible. And there's on a road, a narrow road, there was no room to manoeuvre.
I suppose it shocked them as well.
I've no doubt. Oh, yes. Yes, no doubt. You see, we were going the way they were going. They were escaping. But, yes, that was a mess. That was Amiens. And when we got to Amiens, we parked in a field. And a long-time adversary of mine, a captain whatnot, managed to chop off his fingers in the hatch cover on the tank turret. It come down and just cleanly chopped it off. So nothing would do, but I had to take him, find a forward hospital, back along. which took rather a long time, because you can imagine nobody knew where anything was, and the whole place was crawling with vehicles of all manner and description, not to mention the guards who were clogging up the roads again. They always sent their soft vehicles up first, you know. The tanks came behind, And anyway, we... And I don't know whether it was... Oh, dear. Again, names are escaping me. Names.
You found a dressing
station. We saw crowds of civilians, and they'd got groups of girls there, which they were obviously accusing of collaborating, and they were cutting hair off and throwing furniture out of bedroom windows, and so it was all rather Bayeux. That was the place, I think. Bayeux.
Uh-huh.
Yes, that was rather horrid. I didn't like that.
Really?
No.
So did the fives take Bayeux?
Yeah. Anyway, I left old shoot there in the hospital, and came back to find I'd been posted missing.
Lost you.
I got lost. Yeah. But as I say, the truth of it was that there was you just couldn't drive on. There was too much about. The whole place was crawling with vehicles and people of every kind.
Yeah.
And got back to this field from where we'd started, and just up the road towards Amiens there was a cinema, and Corporal somebody, whose name I've forgotten, went in there and found General Eberbach of the German 6th Army addressing his staff.
Really?
Yes. Ah, yes. And of course that was the end of their briefing, you
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
And I later saw General Eberbach coming out of the cinema, and they putting him on an ARV, which, if you don't know what that is a tank without a turret, armoured recovery vehicle. And there was just a big hole in the middle where the turret would stand. And General, what's his name, was sort of teetering on the edge of this turret ring. When the driver let the clutch in, and he went down head first, and of course laughs all round, as you might expect.
All right.
Yeah.
So did your unit or troop capture many Germans?
Well, not usually. No, we didn't come across them in large numbers until the end of the war,
right,
when we had about 70 odd thousand at Lübeck.
Right.
Didn't know what to do with them. I mean, we'd no food, no nothing.
Right.
And, we did take prisoners, many lads of 14, Indians and
really?
Arabs, even Arabs in the German army, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Who had been living in Germany, presumably?
Presumably, or been conscripted, you see, yeah.
Oh, right. So Bayeux was a bad do, was it?
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't like that.
Mm. What about you saying you was it Como?
Oh, Como. That's where the chap gave me this litre bottle of Cointreau. First time I'd ever had any Cointreau. It's rather nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the seat in the Humber is
this
a telescopic.
Was it? This was a civilian.
Oh, yeah, a French civilian.
Had you started talking to him, or had he come
Oh, yeah, we'd just stopped on the roadside, and he'd come out to have a chat. And my seat in the Humber was a telescopic one, you see, where you could either sit with your top out or drop it and sit inside and pull the hatch across, you see. And I put it behind my seat. Some big booted individual, unbeknown to me, put his foot on it, and the place reeked of it for weeks, and I was furious. I never did find out who'd done it. Probably the driver, probably Harry Gregory did it. He was clumsy anyway.
So, having gone through France, you went into Holland.
You say it begins to get, it gets a bit blurred, some of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Where, Schilberg. You say, lots of these names are familiar, but what they looked like and what we did there, I honestly can't remember.
No.
Honestly can't remember.
Did you get any long breaks in more than a couple of days?
No.
No. You were on the move.
Not ever. On the move all the time. On the move all the time.
Where were you sleeping?
Oh, either sleeping in the car if it was raining, or under a tarpaulin if it wasn't. But there was only room to sleep one in the car, and so I had it.
Did you feel senior to Harry then?
I did, yes. Mm. Rightly or wrongly, yes, I did. Yeah.
So then eventually you went into the Ardennes.
Oh, that was at Christmas, yes.
Yes,
that was a rather odd situation. We'd gone to Ypres, having on the way in Brussels left our vehicles, our armoured vehicles, on the sports ground at in Brussels.
Yeah.
We were going to change our tanks from Shermans to Comets.
Right.
See, and left the tanks in Brussels. We'd gone to Ypres, and we were put up in civilian digs, mm-hmm. which was nice. Met a lot of nice people there.
Really?
And we were there, I don't know, nearly a fortnight, I think. And 6:30 one Sunday, I don't think it was a Sunday morning, I'm sure it was a Sunday morning, 6:30 one Sunday morning, we heard about Rundstedt coming in through the Ardennes. And by 11 o'clock we were back in Brussels in our old vehicles.
Really?
Yeah. And went off to the Ardennes, where, oh God, it was cold. I've never been so cold before or since. We put up at one time in a sort of chateau place, great big banisters up the wall, which we chopped down and made a fire because there was nothing else.
Yeah.
Nothing. It was criminal, really. Criminal.
But you were very cold.
Oh. We couldn't touch bare metal without your skin sticking to it. Yeah. It's like that.
Did they issue you with any extra clothes?
No. Although at some point, about then or after, I can't remember, we did get some tank not uniforms, but overall padded or quilted things with zips from ankle to hip to neck, which were very good.
Yes, that's
been
an improvement.
Hello.
Yeah.
Nice, yes. There.
So, do you remember what you did in the Ardennes?
Well, the I did see a German film of the Ardennes after the war, with showing American prisoners that they had taken walking down the road with their arms up, all dressed in pyjamas. We howled with laughter. I mean, fancy on the front line wearing pyjamas. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
Were they really Americans?
Yeah. Oh, yes. They were Americans, all right, yeah. And, of course, it was a heavily wooded area, so that it was not too difficult to keep out of the way, but our lads were up there just standing guard, I suppose. There were no great battle there. We didn't have any great commotion, as I recall. Mm. I'd got these mortar shells landed a bit close, and the engine, the back tyre was set on fire. And so I was withdrawn, well, I withdrew myself, and I was sent to the workshops in Brussels for repairs. Yeah, all I had was the uniform I stood up in. Filthy. I'd somehow in my travels I'd lost my pay book, couldn't draw any pay, absolutely broke. Fortunately, you could get in the cinemas and the concert halls free if you were in uniform.
In Brussels,
yeah.
What was the atmosphere like in Brussels?
Frightened. Really? Terrified. People used to keep going, what's going on? What's happening? You know, have you been there? Have you been? Yeah. Terrified.
Terrified the Germans had come back.
Yes.
I can understand that. Yeah.
And of course, the people who were who often stopped you were so-called, they called themselves war correspondents.
Really?
Yeah. Newspaper men.
Yeah.
Can I buy you a drink? Can I buy you a drink?
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, they found you come out of the Ardennes. Yeah.
Well, I looked as though I'd come out of somewhere like that. That was filthy.
Yeah. So how long were you in Brussels?
Oh, about a week, I think. In the workshops there before they got everything right.
And then I went.
By then it was over. Yes, it was over. I joined them again in Brussels. Mm-hmm. In the, there's a name for it. You know the Atomium in Brussels? It's somewhere near there.
Oh,
it was. We left all our vehicles.
Yeah. Right. Jeff Easton, end of reel 3. Jeff Easton.